called the case of the estate of Fontana versus the appellee. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's like wrapping fruit at the grocery store or something.
I'm all set. May it please the court. I'll be handling the argument for the appellants. Depending on the questions and the comments from the court, either I or Ms. Redmond will deal with the rebuttal. This appeal concerns the finality of a discovery order, two orders, an order, then order denying rehearing under 28 U.S.C. 158. A1 in a Chapter 15 bankruptcy case concerning motions for protective order regarding six subpoenas to appellants' bank and clearinghouse, seeking 20 years of virtually every conceivable financial record going back to January 1, 1999. And the issue of finality in a bankruptcy court, in a bankruptcy case, is unlike the typical civil litigation proceeding, which plaintiff sues defendants and it proceeds to a trial and a final decision and here's the judgment and now you run to appeal. It requires much more analysis. But fortunately, we have two decisions. We have the to guide us and to provide the answer to this issue. We have the 2020 unanimous decision of the Supreme Court in Ritson Group versus Jackson Masonry, which instructs the courts on how to analyze finality in bankruptcy court cases. And the 2013 decision by the Second Circuit Court of Appeals in Ray Barnett, which
is hypothetical for me. Imagine for the moment, this is obviously not this case, that there was a motion to freeze certain property consistent with the freeze order, and assume with me it's consistent with the freeze order in Brazil. And there is then discovery on that proceeding, subpoenas are sent out to address some ancillary issues of who holds exact title, where that property is particularly located, insert whatever discovery you would have on that situation. And no final ruling had been made on whether to grant the freeze order. Would you agree with me that discovery in that context would not be final in a Chapter 15 proceeding?
I think in that context, I would agree with you.
And why? Thank you. I think that's a wise to agree with me here. And I agree with you, this is not that situation.
And that's just applying the Richardson factors.
I agree with you completely. I guess what I'm asking, though, is with regard to Barnett, and it's why I asked that question. Barnett seems to talk in categorical terms, even though its facts aren't categorical. And it seems to me wrong to say that every Chapter 15 proceeding is like a Section 1782 proceeding that is only related to discovery because I think, as your opposing counsel quite correctly points out, Chapter 15, while having discovery and aid, has lots of other provisions and it has catch-alls about what can and cannot be done in an ancillary domestic aided proceeding. So I guess you agree with me that Barnett really is limited to its facts, where that was really just a discovery request, and isn't categorical that every discovery request in a Chapter 15 is a final judgment or final order under 15 under 158.
I agree with that because Barnett, first of all, Barnett was pre-Ritson, and Ritson really developed the third of three unanimous Supreme Court decisions dealing with exceptions to the finality rule and how you determine finality. The thing about Ritson, though, is the thing about In re Barnett is it is consistent ultimately with Ritson that if it's just about discovery, if it's discreet and it's not relating to a separate issue, and that's one of the requirements.
So counsel, I you and I are on exactly the same page. So, well, hold on, I get it. Now, let me take it a step further where I think you're going. So we agree that if there was another pending proceeding and there was discovery sought in relation to that pending proceeding, I gave you one example, but there's some others, that would not be a final order. We also agree.
Generally.
I understand. We also agree, I know privilege and some other stuff. We also generally agree, I think, that if it were only discovery and nothing else, we all agree that nothing else was contemplated afterwards, that it would be like 1782. In other words, the only reason for the domesticated proceeding was to seek some discrete discovery in the United States related to an asset abroad. That could be like a 1782 and would be final.
You suggested nothing's contemplated afterwards.
Nothing.
Right. Well, even if something were contemplated.
We'll get there. But go with me. Assume that there's nothing contemplated afterwards. We agree that that is clearly final.
Which is our case.
Okay. So that gets us to the wrinkle, and I want you to get to where you're about to get, which is, it seems to me that there is something contemplated afterwards, at least in the hope that there is something contemplated afterwards. I think we have to agree with that. I think you do in your brief where you state, everyone agrees there's three reasons why this was sought, right? For discovery of assets, but also to search for something consistent with the freeze order. I can read the direct part of your brief, I think it's page 8, where we lay out the three factors for why this discovery was sought. So everyone seems to agree that there's a hope of something later. And I guess my question is, that seems to be a bit of a hybrid between the two situations that you and I have agreed on. Well, I'm asking you to answer this. Situation one is there is a proceeding for which discovery is sought. Two is there's only discovery. That's the only reason this thing is here. Nothing is contemplated afterwards. And then there's situation three. So why is situation three fit within Ritson's the discrete proceeding being discovery as preliminary to something that is intended to follow?
You know, I was trying to think of three authors that could apply to this case. Maybe Victor Hugo, or Charles Dickens with Bleak House. And I think in terms of something contemplated, I think maybe we'll go with Beckett's Waiting for Godot. I mean, this case was filed in Brazil in 2001. It went up to an appellate court, and then they confirmed involuntary bankruptcy. So 2002, it's official in Brazil. Trans Brazil's in bankruptcy. It's going. It's been pending now for 20-something years. This case in the Southern District of Florida was filed in 2011. So now we're here on 10 years plus. I think it was April 2011, so we're after 10 years. So here we are. The freeze order that you're referring to, and there's several freeze orders and there's clarifications on it, and that freeze order, by the way, cuts out any interest or any authority regarding our client's personal financial interests. And it also says, don't touch the Bank Secrecy Act. Any bank secrecy, bank confidentiality is how they describe it.
The agreed purpose, though, is to seek some of the property that we all agree is covered by the freeze order that is in the United States or potentially in the United States. Then is that not contemplated within this is a preliminary step in a discrete proceeding regarding the end of that particular a property in the freeze order?
But I don't think because that freeze order was entered in 2018. So here we are two and a half, it was December 2018. And, you know, there are half a dozen freeze orders. And one thing we've learned is that legal Portuguese doesn't translate fluidly into English. But the fact is, nothing's happened in this case for 2.5 years since that freeze order was entered. So in the meantime, you know, whether it's going to result in some proceedings here that would then become part of this.
I'm not sure the length of time. I mean, there are lots of civil cases where you don't get a final judgment for 5 years after a complaint is filed, sometimes more. I'm not sure the length of time, it may be a factor, but is dispositive. So I think you got to give me something else to explain to me why, again, applying Ritson, why the discovery is not a discrete step in the contemplation of getting the property that's part of that freeze order.
Well, and again, the passage of time is an extraordinary factor in this case. It's really unusual. But the thing about the Ritson analysis is it does talk about a discrete procedural sequence, and we have it here. We have the motion for protective order, the hearing, and the ruling. It talks about being apart from proceedings of merits on the creditor's claims. And all our motions deal with is discovery from third parties and limiting it pursuant to a statutory limitation. That's another important factor in this case. Chapter 15 is the only chapter of the Title 11 where it's by statute that defines the scope of discovery. And it's narrower than the scope of discovery under 2004, which is a rule. And that statutory limitation is only on debtors' assets. But continuing on the Ritson analysis issue, it has to dispose of a discrete dispute. The rulings did dispose of a discrete dispute. Discovery from third parties and the scope of the discovery from third parties. And Ritson makes it clear that...
I guess my question is, this not a sequence in a discrete dispute? In other words, you're defining the discrete dispute as only the discovery, but is the sequence not discovery for something that is contemplated to come after that?
I don't think it is, because right now this freeze order is a glimmer in the eyes of somebody in Brazil. There's nothing going on in this case regarding the freeze order. There's no pending motion, there's no proceeding, nothing. So, you know, that there's some proceedings down there 2 or 3 years ago that may or may not ultimately someday result in a implementation of a freeze order and filing motions under the other sections of 1521, sure, possibly. But in the meantime, we have a ruling. And we have a ruling that says they get all of your financial information. They get all your credit cards, all your bank statements, your mortgage applications from now until 1999.
And, Can I ask you a question? And this is actually very helpful, but on a different subject, your colleagues say that this is moot, right? They say you've already produced the documents and it seems like this is moot. I don't know if you might want to address that.
I did note that footnote. It wasn't really developed as an argument in the brief.
That's true, but since it goes to jurisdiction, we need to at least
always pay attention to jurisdiction. Understood. A reversal of the order that allowed this unlimited discovery would mean that they're prohibited and from using the documentation that they obtained improperly, and they would have to either return it or destroy it. And again, it's not just a rule, but it would be in violation of a statute that they obtain this documentation. That's one response to the moot issue. The second is there are another wave of subpoenas that were filed shortly after that ruling. And one of them...
Let me ask you about that then.
Okay.
If there's another wave of subpoenas that's filed, would you then, under your theory, it would be... a final order on that, and we would just keep having appeals with respect to each set of these things that gets filed? We'd sort of be doing it piecemeal?
Well, if this court determined that the first order was a final order reviewable, and if it was reviewed and either reversed or affirmed, then that disposes of the, you know, continuing appeals forever. If there's a ruling that either the statute is going to be enforced and the scope of discovery that the statute that Congress prescribed for discovery by a foreign representative is complied with, then we don't have any more appeals. If the court rules that, you know, this discovery it relates to it and it's a proper, then we don't have any appeals. So really, we do need an appellate decision. It's the type of issue that may be evading ultimately.
But you're saying either way... whatever we decide, whether if we decided on the merits, whatever we decide, whether we uphold it or we find it invalid, then that will end. There won't be any more discovery disputes at all, period.
On that issue of what's the proper scope of discovery under 1521A4, it would be a final resolution of that issue. And I think in the Southern District of Florida, where we have Chapter 15s are not unusual. And again, just the, you know, this issue about if you do find this, we're going to have a morass of appeals and you're going to be overwhelmed with appeals. Second Circuit's still standing after In re Barnett. But the point is, we're talking about a very small group of proceedings. Chapter 15 are a very limited number of the type of cases that are filed under Title 11. And it's the only chapter that is an ancillary proceeding, so it does analogize quite correctly to In re Barnett, where we're never going to have a final ruling. And there, if we don't have it reviewed here, we're never going to have review because they're not going to deal with it in Brazil. They're not going to look at 1521. They're not going to look at In re Barnett and all the cases that are percolating among the bankruptcy courts trying to figure out what is the proper scope. What is the relationship between 2004 and 1521? All fascinating issues. I think I'm out of time.
You are? When the number's getting bigger, that means you're out of time.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'll put my glasses on to do this.
We're not sure you're going to get that job at the grocery store.
It's like the end of a lamp.
Is this case moot?
The particular discovery in this case has been produced. I don't disagree with Mr. Dervishi that this is the kind of case that is repetitive and could be mooted. But I think that's exactly what Judge Rosenbaum was pointing at. If, in fact, every discovery order in a Chapter 15 is determined to be a final order, not only will this case, half of those cases will become mooted because there won't be a stay pending appeal, somebody will argue to a district court judge, you need to stay the discovery because it will then become moot. And we'll have the piecemeal litigation that is supposed to be what we're not having.
So I have two questions sort of related to that. excuse me, the first one is, your friend across the aisle says it's not moot because you can redress the injury that we have because you won't be able to use the documents if we find that discovery was improper, right? So first of all, do you agree or disagree with that? And if you disagree with it, why? And second, sort of on another tangent, I guess. I want to ask you, if this is not a final order, what else would have to happen before it's final for purposes of appeal?
I'm going to do the second question first,
okay,
Your Honor, because I don't want to snatch the defeat from the jaws of victory, but I do want to talk about Judge Luck's point. The Ritson argument that is being made here, and it's Ritson and Bullard, so we have unanimous Supreme Court decisions, one authored by the Chief Justice and one authored by Justice Ginsburg. In those cases, these are not Chapter 15 cases, they're more international in scope. What the appellants are arguing is that regular discovery orders that happen every day in bankruptcy court for domestic bankruptcy cases would have the same analysis of, is that request being made in further to something that's contemplated. That's Rule 2004. This court in International Horizons in 1982, under the prior rule, under Rule 2005, which was the same broad discovery that's granted to bankruptcy trustees, this court said, that's a discovery order. If the person who has asked for the documents refuses to produce them and gets held in contempt, that's your pathway to the appellate process. If the person who's holding it is holding your documents, and they won't go to jail, they won't be held in contempt, that's the Perlman Doctrine. That's what International Horizons was about. And that was in our brief in response to the jurisdictional question.
So you're saying it doesn't matter that it's not a final order, they can still get before the court, but they just have to risk contempt.
And that's what Chief Justice Roberts said in Bullard.
I understand.
That last four sections says that if something egregious happens.
Right. But let me ask it to you this way. Even considering that, what has to happen for this order to become, for there to be a final order in this, whereby this discovery ruling as a part of that final order would be appealable?
Discovery
without order, going through the contempt route.
There is no path in general civil litigation for a discovery order to have a direct path of finality.
Counsel, that's simply not true. It's not. There's a final judgment in every civil litigation.
Exactly.
Right. But that's my question.
That is exactly Judge Rosenbaum's question.
Ah.
There doesn't appear to be a light at the end of this tunnel.
Correct.
Even in the worst civil litigation that I have seen, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. It's a stipulated dismissal, which could be appealed. It is a final judgment, which is entered against somebody. There's somehow to get to an appellate court.
Agreed.
How do we get to an appellate court through a final judgment?
In a domestic Chapter 7, there is no final order in a Chapter 7 when you will review a subpoena issued under Rule 2004. That's what International Horizons took up. And in fact, after Ritson and Bullard were decided, if you look at those cases...
Isn't there an order closing the bankruptcy case?
There is a report that's filed, and that was the analogy they drew. If you look at their reply, they say, this is different. Chapter 15 is different than Chapter 7. I submit they run exactly the same. Federal Rule of Bankruptcy Procedure 5009 says you close a 7 the same way you close a 15. Now, in experience, when a Chapter 7 is closed, there isn't an appeal with respect to a Rule 2004 examination that happened 5 years earlier.
Let me back up. And when you close a bankruptcy, there is some order which says we accept a plan, we restructure, we do something. Something is issued, right?
In a Chapter 7 case, Your Honor, under 5009A, a Chapter 7 trustee would file a report. If there is no objection to the report, the case is deemed to be fully administered.
Right.
That's it.
And it can be appealed.
If somebody thinks that it's not fully administered,
right.
Correct. And arguably, I guess they could argue about a Rule 2004 examination subpoena that was issued someday, back in the day.
In other words, the light is long, but there's some light.
That is true.
I guess, I want to go back to Judge Rosenbaum's question, which is, what is that here? What's the equivalent of that here?
Exactly the same. 5009C, same rule of Federal Rule of Bankruptcy Procedure. A is for 7s, C is for 15s. Chapter 15, foreign representative files a report and says, I believe it's fully administered. If nobody objects, the case is deemed fully administered.
I have to say, that seems inconsistent with Ritson, where we're to look at not the scope of the entire bankruptcy, but the discrete proceeding. So the discrete proceeding here seems to be in contemplation of getting information about an asset under the freeze order. That's essentially what you say, right?
That's correct.
Okay. So I get that if there was a motion to freeze a particular asset and a discovery was sought in execution of that, that to me is a clear-cut case where the discovery order would not be final, again, assuming no privilege or anything like that. But in a case where we're kind of hoping and kind of feeling and kind of maybe it'll happen, but we don't know and we're fishing to see, that does not seem like another sequence in the discrete process, but an end itself in a discrete process.
The analogy there would mean that every Chapter 7 bankruptcy case and Chapter 11 cases where Rule 2004 examinations are taken every day to figure out, does the debtor have assets that have not been disclosed? It may lead to something, which would then lead to a motion for turnover, but it may lead nowhere. Like you go to a grand jury and you ask for documents, it may not lead to a charge. By the way, the Supreme Court and grand jury said you don't get a regular final order.
But an examination of a debtor is leading to somewhere. I mean, the purpose is to list the assets. In every one of these cases, there generally aren't any. They'll issue a report saying there's nothing here, guys. Discharge, there's no objection from a creditor. It's discharged, right?
Correct. And by the way, on the discharge, I want to make sure that we understand.
Right.
A Chapter 7 discharge doesn't end the Chapter 7 case. That's really 60 days after the original filing of the bankruptcy.
Right.
So that's not the end of the game. The end is the report.
Right.
But I agree with you. The purpose of a Rule 2004, whether in a Chapter 15 or in a domestic case, is to hopefully find something you can levy on or grab or turn over or do something. It is always in contemplation of something else. It may lead, you may drill dry holes, but at least you're trying to get towards something. And this court and every other circuit before Ritson and Bullard held that Rule 2004 examination orders are not appealable. They are appealable under all of the regular exceptions to finality, contempt, Perlman.
The counsel, let's just say I accept everything you're saying here. The context still matters. If this was a Chapter 15 proceeding where it was in essentially like a 1782, where there was simply one request. The request is, we need a particular document that resides in the United States or a deposition of a witness who resides in the United States for our foreign bankruptcy, and that's the only thing it's about. You would agree that that order would be final, or you still think you need to file the report to get to finality in that case?
I do not believe that order was final. And the reason I don't believe that order is final, the only case that is held that it would be final is Barnett.
Yes.
And since it's the only case, I applied my legal realism in looking at it. If you look at Barnett, the way it got to the Second Circuit, was a very strange animal. The order that gave the discovery or order of discovery wasn't appealed. The Second Circuit decided that they wanted to hear the appeal because the first time somebody raised jurisdiction was in their initial brief. So it didn't come with any briefing from the parties as to whether or not the analogy to 1782 makes any sense. And the context does matter. Applying jurisdictional principles and finality principles by analogy is something that is not particularly common. So there could be an argument if you wanted to say we're going to carve out bankruptcy cases under Chapter 15 that are solely requesting documents for use in the foreign main proceeding. The problem with that point would be, where's the end of that? And Justice Ginsburg in Ritson at the end talks about this and said, when you're dealing with finality, because we have these safety valves, we have contempt, we have Perlman doctrine, we have collateral order doctrine, we have other ways to get to the point. And by the way, you can take leave to appeal. District court can always grant leave to appeal. If something crazy happened at the bankruptcy court, they would apply the factors and say, look, this went off the rails. I'm going to take jurisdiction over this interlocutory order, enter an order, and that's appealable to the Court of Appeals. But going back to it, in that circumstance, in a Chapter 7 case where a domestic bankruptcy trustee issues a 2004 for the sole purpose of deciding whether the bankruptcy trustee is going to create a foreign case. Remember, Chapter 15 is enacted in multiple countries. That was the point. It's the Unstrutral model law. So we're not the only ones. In fact, we adopted what the Europeans created. So if a Chapter 7 trustee here issues a Rule 2004 in which this court in International Horizons said that's not a final order, and every other circuit has said that's not a final order, and after Bullard, there's one case called Bestwall, which also said discovery orders in 2004 are not final. If that Chapter 7 trustee is seeking information in the United States for money flows that came through the United States for purposes of opening a bankruptcy in Switzerland or a bankruptcy in Brazil, would we say that fits the analogy of a chapter of 1782? Clearly doesn't.
Counsel, your time's running out. I want you to get to Judge Rosenbaum's other question on mootness. And I think what her question is there a way to redress this? Can we not order, or have we not in the past said that we can order the destruction of the trustee or the party to destroy the documents or to return those documents as a remedy for the improper turning over of documents? And does that not address the mootness issue?
I haven't seen that yet. I don't see why the bankruptcy judge who has jurisdiction over the foreign representative, who is the one who sought the documents, the concern I would have would be, like any other post-order conduct, these documents were reviewed. They were sent to our co-counsel in Brazil. They may have been used. Remember, the first round of subpoenas yielded documents that led to this freeze order. So one of the purposes of this Chapter 15 was to aid, and it did the job. These freeze orders arose from some of the information that was found. I don't know if there's a practical relief to pull back documents that have been used in another proceeding, or documents that we've already filed. Anything in the United States, of course, the judge could tell us, destroy it, throw it away. I'm sealing all of the court records. I don't know the answer to whether or not the bankruptcy court here.
So there is some relief that could be offered.
There is some relief that could be offered. I mean, we have never taken the position, and what Mr. Dervishi was pointing to is our firm is one of the main filers of Chapter 15s in the United States. And in those cases, we have never taken the position that the bankruptcy judge doesn't have the power to tell us to do anything that the judge believes that he can do. And under 105, which is the all writs provision of the bankruptcy code, they have very strong powers to do what they think is best. I want to get back to this Barnett issue, since it's the only decision that supports the finality. Barnett didn't review the discovery order. It only reviewed the recognition order. Now, in the Barnett case, there were two orders. There was a recognition order, and then there was a separate discovery order. And they only appealed the first order and not the second. And the Second Circuit went in a very tortured way to decide that they could review the first order, even though the second order hadn't been appealed. And the reason I point that out is that this court, in an earlier iteration of this case, and it's highlighted in our briefs, the earlier set of subpoenas a jurisdictional question was issued by this court, and this court answered. Now, the argument they've made, they didn't argue Barnett. It existed, but they didn't argue it. And they argue that was really a Perman Doctrine case. But this court, in response to that jurisdictional question, said, this is not a final order, which is in keeping with International Horizons and every other circuit that looked at it. Now, clearly, it's before Ritson, it's before Bullard. I will point out, though, there's no indication in Bullard or in Ritson that discovery orders are considered to be preliminary proceedings or preliminary discrete parts of a proceeding. Just like discovery, as we understand it sort of in a colloquial way, the purpose of discovery is to lead to something.
The problem is this isn't colloquial. I mean, that's really the issue. It's not, I agree with you in the colloquial sense, discovery is not because it's in the aid of something. Mm-hmm. But this is really not in the aid of anything, at least that's pending right now. It's on a hope and a prayer.
But that is in contemplation of something, just like a domestic case would be. And please understand, I know it's the parade of horribles argument that everybody makes. But in this case alone, Mr. DeVichy is quite correct. Lots of subpoenas are issued when you're trying to find out where the diverted assets went. My time is up.
I think somebody's trying to hand you something from the audience. There's somebody.
I got the nod for the rehearing, for the rebuttal. The Marygrove decision in 2015 didn't discuss any of these issues. It just treated the subpoena, which was procedurally different, the order just treated it as a single judicial unit. General rule is discovery is not appealable. It's not final order. And I think the argument that somehow we're saying all discovery orders in 2004 now would be discoverable, and that's our argument. I don't think that's correct at all. Chapter 15.
What's the limiting principle?
Well, it's a Chapter 15. It's ancillary. And it, again, it has to go through the Ritson analysis. It has to be separate from the rest of the case. It has to be before and apart proceedings regarding the creditor's claim.
The analogy seems pretty strong. I mean, from Chapter 7, what your co-counsel was describing, there's an investigation that's done. You come in, you talk about your assets. There may be some subpoenas or something to banks to put it out there just to satisfy the trustee. No one objects, and then the thing just sort of ends.
But ultimately, Chapter 7 will result in a discharge order and a final report.
This will, too, at some point.
Well, that's another point I want to make.
I mean, I have kids. They may see it.
In 1517D, it says that a case under this chapter may be closed in the manner prescribed by another section of the code. It's not mandatory. So, there may be some administrative requirements that would result in closings of Chapter 15s, but the trustees in Brazil may or may not decide to close it. They may abandon it. They may wait for another group of trustees to come in and see if they can maybe do something with the Fontana Cipriani family. There's no final judgment. There's no discharge. There's no reorganization. But the argument about we're asking for all subpoenas, all discovery to be subject to appeals, it's not what we're asking for or what we're suggesting. The Supreme Court has, in Ritson, it didn't say we're just going to deal with stay issues or with reorganizations. It basically said, it very clearly said, in bankruptcies, this is the analysis you apply. So if a subpoena in a 2004 satisfies the requirements and the analysis under Ritson, then it's a final order, and you better appeal it within 14 days. Because if you don't, what will happen to you is what happened to the creditor in Ritson. They didn't appeal the denial of the stay until the confirmation order, and the circuit court, affirmed by the Supreme Court, said your appeal was untimely. It should have been done within the 14 days. It's a short fuse in bankruptcy. There always exists in Chapter 15 the possibility of some other proceeding being instituted here, other relief being sought under other sections Chapter 15. But I don't think that's sufficient to defer a finality of a significant order denying this protection until something happens. I have No other comments. Any other questions?
I don't think so. But thank you for your presentation. This was very helpful.
Thank you.
We have the case.